Husker Doc Talk Podcast, 2016, Episode 10. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm Travis Justice, joined by former Husker All-American Dr. Rob Zadiskus. Say hi, Rob.
How are you doing tonight?
You know, the Huskers are now, what, 4-0?
4-0.
Got a Big Ten win on the road.
Yeah, it's against, I don't know, just the fact that it's Northwestern still irks me because and they even tried to give this one away almost.
But they did win in the all-whites. The Husker Doc Talk Podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. The Remington Trophy is presented annually to the nation's top center. Named after former Husker great Dave Remington, the Remington Trophy banquet will take place on January 14th, 2017 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. As the year moves on, we're going to keep you informed on who this year's Ford Legends Award winner is and who the featured speaker will be. The Remington Trophy presentation benefits the Boomer Esiason Foundation, where Dave is the president. Cystic fibrosis is a chronic disease that affects the lungs and the digestive system of about 30,000 children and adults in the United States, 70,000 worldwide, folks. So for more on how you can help fight cystic fibrosis and help those who have it, visit esiason.org. Coming up a little bit later on, the Remington Trophy Watch List Spotlight. We want to welcome Husker Hounds to the Husker Doc Talk Podcast this season, now with 3 stores in Omaha. Omaha, Husker Hounds is the best place to buy Husker gifts and officially licensed apparel. Don't wait until game day. Get stocked up on all your big red gear right now. Get to one of 3 Omaha area locations and load up, including the new Husker Hounds store at 149th and Maple, which is now open. For online orders, go to huskerhounds.com. And we want to thank huskermax.com for sharing the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. For up-to-date Husker news, visit huskermax.com. And I have to confess, this week, Dr. Rob and I, we are on a bender, as in a coffee bender, because the beer of the week is from Surly Brewing, which is out of Minneapolis, St. Paul area. And Surly's, I'm wearing the shirt tonight, Rob, and we're drinking the beer. What do you think of the coffee bender?
I like it. You think about the whole coffee and a beer thing, which, I mean, there's been a lot of places that I know have kind of come out with variations on this in some way, shape, or form, where they've got a little bit added in there, and I'm not talking about a beer that has floral notes of coffee. Yeah, I'm talking about coffee added in, and I mean, there's a few places in town that have done that periodically.
This is like iced coffee.
This is like, I feel like I'm drinking a coffee with a little bit of beer added to it. It's what I feel like I'm drinking, but it's when I say that, I'm almost kind of, I don't know, that doesn't sound all that good.
This
I don't know what
good.
They did. They did it right. I mean, it's tasty. It's almost refreshing.
I know. And I'm sitting there going, okay, it's going to give me a good kick. So
I want to go mow the lawn.
You think?
And it's 8:39 at night.
So yeah. So we're drinking Surly, the coffee bender. Are you big on the Surly beers? Have you had Surly before? They've got a wide arrangement.
I know of them. I don't think I've ever tried it.
Well, next time you go to Beertopia, next time you go to your local Hy-Vee, look for the Surly. Buy the Surly. You don't even have to get the coffee bender. They've got lots of other stuff. So
yeah, I like anything new. This is a good one, though.
See?
But like I said, it's definitely tastes like it's more coffee than beer. But then I'm looking at the alcohol by volume. It's over 5%, so it's not like it's watered down per se. It's not
Mick Ultra.
It's not one of my beloved Belgian ales in terms of alcohol content either, which at that point you might as well be drinking a glass of wine. But yeah, they did it right. I'm pleasantly surprised.
All right, this is going to be a podcast. Forewarning that many of you may not listen to our podcast again after this broadcast, and some of you may continue to listen.
People hate Illinois that much.
There is nothing more interesting than 2 white guys sitting around talking about social issues, especially a very wealthy doctor and a middle-class broadcaster. But social issues is the topic of the week, and it happened at the Northwestern game when Michael Roseivy, Muhammad Berry, and Dyshon Neal decided to, well, take a knee for the national anthem. This caught Husker fans off guard because traditionally...
I'm almost kind of surprised people didn't see it coming at some point.
Are they stupid? Here's why.
You got high schools around the country doing it, for God's sake.
And let me tell you why. The good folks from South Park set everything up for us.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. We are live at South Park Elementary School, where the local girls' volleyball team is about to take on the Jefferson Sabres.
And, Jim, it is packed. Sellout crowd tonight. The first time in team history. Everyone turning out to see what's going to happen.
That's right, Mike. All eyes tonight are, of course, on fourth grader Nicole Daniels. Will she sit or stand for the national anthem?
This week, with athletes all over the country sitting down for the national anthem, the question on everyone's mind is, what is this little girl going to do?
She's not going to sit down. Why would she?
Screw that. I got $100 riding on this. Come on, Nicole, sit it out.
Now please rise for the national anthem.
This is it.
The national anthem starts. Nicole Daniels seems to be waiting so far. Oh, and Heidi Turner is sitting down.
Oh. Mike, this is totally unexpected. All eyes were on Nicole when Heidi Turner comes out of nowhere and sits down
and
for
the... And there goes Megan Ridley. The crowd is going wild. What a turn of events. Let's check in with Dave.
And Mike, I've just looked at the girls' Twitter accounts, and it appears they are sitting out the national anthem to protest all the harassment and trolling they receive on the internet. Complete surprise, Dave. Nobody saw this coming. Three girls now sitting down, and finally there goes Nicole.
Wow!
Yeah, $100!
And as the anthem draws to a close, this thing is over.
Final result, four athletes sitting out on the national anthem, three of them not even black. A shocker here in South Park. Thanks for joining us.
Oh my God, that was great.
The point of that is, it seems like everybody's keeping score with this thing now. And for people who were shocked that three Nebraska players took a knee during the national anthem, well, first of all, you're living under a rock. But Rob, before we get into this whole debate, the self-proclaimed greatest fans in America, especially on my Facebook page and my Twitter feed, were not great fans at all. And truthfully, downright mean-spirited. And Michael Roseivy talked about today that he got death threats. People said he should be lynched. People said he should be hung. If you are one of those fans, you're a redneck loser. You are a redneck loser if you actually made a threat towards any of these people.
I totally agree. Now, here's my take on it. And I'm one of these guys where, and I hope this doesn't sound like a cop-out, because in actuality, it's not. But it's almost kind of a cliche, but my take is, you know, I may disagree with what you say. I may disagree with what you think, but I believe you've got a constitutional right to say that and express it. Now, and again, there may be some consequences depending on the setting.
To say that you should be hung?
No. I'm just talking about what
to kneel down during the national anthem.
Yeah,
Dyshon
and Michael Roseivy and what Muhammad did. What they did, they've got a constitutional right to do that. It sure as heck beats burning down a neighborhood and looting a bunch of stores as a method of expressing yourself.
Does. Thank you very
much. And, here's my thing. I'm sitting here going, okay, here's guys who are literally exercising the United States Constitution.
Yep.
I'm one of those people that, I mean, you go down the list. You look at politics in America today. And you look, I mean, as we're recording this, the presidential debate is going on, and you've got a guy who's a caricature of himself, who I'm probably going to vote for by default because there's nobody else.
Gary Johnson.
Have you seen interviews with this
guy? Go Libertarian.
Have you seen interviews with him?
Go Libertarian.
Jill Stein, maybe.
No. Go Libertarian.
Gary Johnson, he might be the biggest idiot I have ever heard speak in my life, and most of his policies when he was governor of New Mexico.
He was a great governor for New Mexico.
He didn't do anything because there's only like 18 people in the state, and 17 of them are a hippie commune doing art projects
back
up in the mountains outside of Santa
back
Fe,
to
for
your
God's
point.
Sake. And, the other candidate's an absolute criminal. So I think if more people were involved in exercising their constitutional rights, I don't think the United States would be in the current political straits they're in right now. Go peaceably assemble. Go practice your religion. Go buy a firearm. Go protest something and speak out against a government policy that you disagree with. Go do something to exercise your constitutional rights. Do I disagree with the manner in which these guys are doing it? Absolutely not. I will say this. I've got a fundamental problem with... See, you got me started.
That's good. That's what this is for.
But I've got a fundamental problem with people metaphorically biting the hand that feeds them when it comes to the constitutional rights. When you're protesting the flag, when you're protesting the national anthem, you're protesting the very right, the country that's giving you the rights to protest. But that being said, it's a constitutional right, and I think he's got a right to do it. Now, at the same time, I would be willing to bet that 99% of the people who are so vehemently, I shouldn't even say vehemently, the people who are crudely and against this, the people calling for him to be kicked off the team, lynched, burned in effigy, etc. I saw plenty of lynching references on my Twitter feed.
Now, you know what's funny? Hold on.
I want in here. No, you can't. I got a line going here. I guarantee you 99% of those people did not listen to or did not read a transcript of Michael Rose Ivey's statement. Now, and again, I'm not saying I'm sitting here in wholehearted agreement with his stance, but I do feel he's got a right to take that stance. And if you listen to what he said, he specifically singles out his support for the U.S. military.
Well, hold on.
He singles
out
support for law enforcement.
Here it is right here. Listen to this.
To make it clear, I am not anti-police. I'm not anti-military, nor am I anti-American. I love my country deeply, and I appreciate the freedom that it professes to afford me.
He does. I mean, he goes on to point out that his stance is that he feels like he has a platform to speak out in regards to inequality, wherever it may show up. And he references a number of historical figures to make his point, but he talks about social inequality. He talks about gender inequality. So any of you women out there who are complaining about this and feels like this is an abomination, he's standing up for gender rights. He's standing up for racial equality. He's standing up on this across multiple levels and multiple platforms. And his take is not that the police are wrong, the military's wrong, and the U.S. is a horrible place. What he's saying is that the U.S. is a great place, and he's got an avenue, he's got a voice that a lot of other people don't have. He's got an opportunity to speak out and bring particular issues to light, and he wishes to do that. And again, like I said, it's a constitutional right. If you are against him being able to say that, if you are against the university not necessarily taking the same stance, but at least backing his right to say it, which the university has backed his right to say it, if you don't agree with his right, then that's, you're disagreeing with the United States Constitution.
The interesting part of this is, and by the way, this is not going to be a total podcast where we kiss the ass of Michael Rose Ivey, because I do have...
And again, I do not agree with the whole not standing during
but
the
I'm
national
not even,
anthem.
I'm not even going to get into
I hear the national anthem in a high school gym, next gym over, when I'm watching the JV game.
And you stand up.
I stand up and I put my hand over my heart.
But to me, this is going to go beyond the national anthem. Because let me say this. To stand for the national anthem is not a law. Okay, first of all, you have to understand that. It is not a law. You are not required to stand for the national anthem. If you choose to criticize, if you're one of these, love it or leave it, and all this other stuff, you need to understand, then you're no different than ISIS. Because ISIS kills people for not agreeing with their law and their way of doing things.
What makes the United States the United States, and what makes us different from the rest of the world, is the fact that you can do this, that we have... a constitutionally protected right to criticize our own government, to criticize our country if we see that there's something wrong with it. Now, you know, here's another thing. The same love it or leave it people, the same people decrying him not standing for the national anthem, are the same people who for the last 8 years have been screaming bloody murder about the current president and his policies. If you want to talk, I mean, if you want to talk a hardcore right-wing policy, all of you guys who have been criticizing the U.S. government for the last 8 years, it's you've got a constitutional right to do that as well, too. You can draw any caricature of Barack Obama you want. You can publish it in a newspaper and not have the U.S. government come to your newspaper headquarters and shoot the place up like happens in France.
As we looked at what's been going on in this country, the injustice that has been taking place primarily against people of color, we all realize there is a systematic problem in America that needs to be addressed. We felt it was our duty to step up and join the course of athletes in the NFL, the WNBA, college, and high school, using their platforms to highlight these issues.
Now, so moving on from the national anthem, and that's the platform they use, and that's the platform they can. What bothers me about that is the overall understanding that there's never a good discussion on either side about social injustice. Because what gets lost in the whole debate is nobody wants to admit that part of their side is wrong. I can fully admit that since really the beginning of time, there has been social injustice, there has been economic injustice, there has been prejudice. I do not deny that. I do not try to hide that. What I do have a problem with...
You hate black people.
That's, I do not hate black people. What I do have a problem with are people that act like if somebody gets shot, that person was automatically innocent. Nobody ever talks about, was there actually a crime committed? Was there actually a gun present? And I just got done taking, I did a ride-along for 3 hours with the police. I just did an eight-hour class with African-Americans, with Hispanics, and other whites. And it was very enlightening because we went into the simulator with a gun. And whether the shoot or don't shoot scenario in like virtual reality 3D. And you need to understand, and I did not know this going to this class, police do not shoot to wound. They shoot to kill. Because if there is a gun present and that gun is not dropped, they fire. And it's not to fire in the leg because you can still have a gun in your hand. If you are told to drop the gun, drop the gun. And you bring up a good point. When you do protest, let's go to Charlotte, and you have every right to protest in Charlotte. But when you start throwing stuff through a Walmart window and looting places, that's a crime. And
not a protest. That's a riot.
That's a riot.
That's a riot.
And it's done for selfish reasons. My whole point in this discussion is that there's never good discourse or conversation because everybody's got to be right. Nobody ever compromises in a conversation. I can sit here and admit absolutely there's wrongs, but you have to admit there's wrongs on your side too. And that's where things get lost. And Michael Rose Ivey, his statement was passionate. And I think people felt sorry for him because A, he was threatened, and B, he told stories of, and we're going to get to one of his sound bites that he had actually on campus. But if you're going to go through a list of people and thank them and put, you know, you're going to talk Malcolm X, you're going to talk Martin Luther King, you're going to talk Gandhi, but then you put Tupac in the same sentence.
I did kind of wonder where Tupac
came from. To the African-American community, especially in this age group, Tupac is a hero to many people. But Tupac did prison time for a sexual assault, and Tupac was killed because of his gang affiliations. Wasn't in a gang, but he was killed because of his gang affiliations. So, I mean, be careful what you throw out there, because Tupac wasn't what I'd call a model citizen by any means.
He did clean it up with a little Susan B. Anthony.
Yeah,
though.
But you can't go there. You can't throw Tupac.
No, I know. That kind of threw the Tupac reference threw me off. And I, you know, hey, I agree with you, and if you look at my problem with some of the larger scale protests / riots we've been seeing, it's been in the one in Charlotte. It was an African-American police chief backing the African-American cop who shot the African American who had a gun and a criminal record. And it's one of these things where if you talk to people who try to take it, well, here's the reasonable stance on it. We're merely using this to highlight other injustices. The problem is that when you try to use a situation like what happened in Charlotte, for instance, Ferguson, Missouri, Eric Garner in New York, you had individuals with a criminal record engaging in crimes who get shot by the police, and you lose all credibility.
I mean,
using those as, okay, well, this is our excuse to vent for all the other times that there has been,
but it doesn't work racial, that way.
And that's my point. That's why you talk about how there's got to be some admitted wrongdoing on both sides. You can't use an instance like what happened in Charlotte, where you had a guy with a criminal record, with wanted on an arrest warrant, with a gun, getting shot, and saying, well, here's an example of social injustice. No, that was a criminal with a gun getting shot. You need to find another example to convince me.
Tulsa, perfect example. What happened in Tulsa the other day, and the female cop's been brought up on charges, totally a social injustice, totally out of line. What happened in Chicago, the numerous instances of police brutality there.
The shooting in Minneapolis.
Absolutely.
But
what upsets me is if you try to have this conversation, here's what I don't like about it. And this is where I think people get upset about everything, is that if you try to have this conversation and say, well, yeah, but not every cop is crooked. Not every cop shooting is racially motivated. And if you say that, you're painted to be a racist, and I don't think that's fair. I don't, because people don't want to have a good dialogue. And again, it's easy for two white guys sitting here having this, but I think it needs to be said. His passionate statement today, I think, was passionate because of the threats that he got, which were stupid. They came from fans. But this, Rob, this bothered me the most. I didn't learn anything from Michael Rose Ivey today until he said this.
My freshman year, I could remember going to a frat party and was told that niggas are not allowed in this house. We were escorted out several minutes later by security officers. People want athletes like Deshaun, Muhammad, and myself to remain silent and just play football. However, we cannot ignore the lives that we've lived. We as black athletes cannot remain silent. We are fully aware that football consumes only a small part of our lives, as we are often reminded football doesn't last forever.
If that happened your freshman year, why didn't you come out sooner? Because that's horrible. If that really happened in Lincoln, if that really happened at a frat house, that should have been exposed a long time ago, and that frat should be exposed today. I mean, he should have named the frat right then and there. That's the only thing I learned today.
That kind of scares me because I was in a fraternity down in
Lincoln. Did you not allow black people in your frat?
Actually, well, when I was there, we actually had guys who would come by and say, hey, can we come out and hang out and party? And as long as everybody... I shouldn't be admitting we had beer on campus.
No, but it's black.
As long as it was guys who were like, hey, it's whatever per person. Come on in. Give me your $5. And
for the beer.
Yeah. Well, because we all had to pay too. Welcome in and hang out and have a good time.
See, but if that actually happened.
But that happened at my fraternity where guys... And admittedly,
but did you ever
it was
say,
guys
did you,
on the football team, so it was guys I knew.
But you didn't have somebody at the door saying N-bombs weren't allowed. I mean, because he used the N-word.
Oh, heck no.
No, and that's what I'm saying. That's the only thing I really learned and really caught my eye today, and I think that's what made it so passionate, is that if that really happened to him, first of all, I think he should name the frat. He should name the frat tomorrow or today, because that stuff should not take place. It just shouldn't.
No, it shouldn't. But on the at that point where he said they said situation as well too, and
but he's going to get the benefit of the doubt now. He gets the benefit of the doubt.
I think so. Yeah, and I don't doubt that it happened because I think there is racism exists and it exists on multiple levels. I think anytime you've got. And this is the other thing that I think is part of the problem, is that I think people are scared to admit we're all different.
That's true.
We all look at each other differently.
The interesting thing is, I see an African American president who I voted for one time. Are things better racially now than they were when he took office in 2008?
I was going to give you an emphatic no. But the only reason why I question saying emphatically no, they're not different. If anything, they're far worse than they were 8 years ago.
Is
that maybe they were just as bad then, just nothing was up on the surface. Does that make sense?
It's so weird to me. I mean,
I think there's been a lot more venting. Venting's not the right word for it, but I think a lot more of it is on the surface. There's been a lot of raw emotion that's been exposed over the last couple of years.
The Milwaukee police sheriff. Yeah. There's certain things that have to be addressed.
Clark?
Yes. He brought up a good point. Nobody ever wants to really talk about black-on-black crime because that goes not in the debate. And another thing they don't want to talk about.
Well, I think most white people don't care.
I would agree with that.
And I'm not saying
no,
that.
No, I would agree with that because we're lost in our suburban cocoons.
Yeah, I would be, for the most part, and I say this not as a, hey, here's the way it is, and I'm happy about this. For the most part, if it doesn't affect you, you don't care about that.
I would agree.
And
I would agree
in a generality. Let's say most African-American communities or communities that have a majority of African-American people living within a given community. Let's say those communities had very little violence within them. Let's say Millard in Omaha. Let's say Millard was a hotbed of white-on-white gang violence.
Okay.
The Millard West Wildcats were shooting it up on a nightly basis with the Mustangs. Patriots were just going to kind of wait it out and see who wins and then try and move in at the end. If there was a whole host of white-on-white crime, who would probably not care much about it?
The African-Americans.
The African-American community. Most of South Omaha. They wouldn't care. If it didn't affect them in their day-to-day lives, they wouldn't care.
Isn't that human nature by everybody?
And that's my point, is that that's human nature. And Clark's right. There is a massive, massive, massive amount of black-on-black crime in America, and nobody touches it.
And another subject that nobody wants to talk about, or they don't want to hear it, is that the single mother, right? I mean, the number of black fathers that abandon their wives and or their single moms and kids are brought up in just not good families.
I think in a number of minority communities there is multi-level socioeconomic
but you problems. Know but what's interesting about that, and I think I saw a stat, and again I'm pulling the stat out of the backside of my ass, so I'm somewhat right, like in 1963-65, coming off the civil rights movement, the 12% of African American women were like unwed and had kids. 12. It's like somewhere like at 70% right now. Why has that changed? I mean, I'm not.
I think a lot of it has come from, I'll call it social engineering, which isn't, again, this is why I'm a Republican and this is going to come out in full blatant force here. But I think a lot of it is social engineering and social policy within the Democratic Party, which on an incredibly, incredibly boiled down thumbnail sketch version is, you take the whole, you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, you teach him to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. The Democratic Party, it just keeps handing out the daily fish.
Now, Michael Rose Ivey was caught off guard by this whole stuff.
We did this understanding the implications of these actions. But what we didn't expect was the enormous amount of hateful, racially motivated comments we received from friends, peers, fans, members of the media, and others about the method of protest.
You know, I knew there would be some dill rods out there that would say something, but were you surprised at the number of people that were like, kick them off the team, they owe the university apologies?
Yeah, but even then, there's been a lot of that. Not as much as what you saw on a national basis, for instance, when Kaepernick did it,
yeah.
Which he was kind of the sort of the starting point for all of this. That's kind of where it all began.
And that brings it back. We opened up with the South Park thing where they basically said, we're keeping score now. Yeah. Now, that was funny. And if you – and I encourage –
gotta love South Park.
South Park, I tell you what.
If there's a line, they will cross
but
not it.
But I think Parker and Stone do a good job.
Oh, it's highly intelligent because getting, they do make a – they make a point.
And I think now we're keeping score. Who can kneel? Who can sit? Who can lock arms? Tonight, the Saints and Falcons locked arms around the field in a show of unity. It's almost like, okay, what's the score now? And the more you do it, does it really have an impact? Colin Kaepernick had an impact. The more you see it, do you become immune to it? Does it not have the same effect? Or are people showing up? Because the funny thing about that, the South Park bit, it was at a volleyball game. Everybody showed up for the national anthem.
I saw that episode.
And after it was over, after the national anthem, everybody left.
And that's kind of what it's turned into. This has become kind of its own little show. And I think it has, to a degree, lost a little bit of impact. And I think it's going to continue to lose impact, but I think that's human nature. Everything does after a little while. You know, if I've got a problem with it, outside of what I had mentioned earlier in terms of the irony of biting the constitutional hand that gives you the right in the first place, it's the fact that I think you see a lot of people who do this now, and I'm talking about some of the college athletes, some of the high school athletes doing it, who don't have I don't think they have a good understanding of the implications of it. When you've got the high school football team in unison doing this, you know, two-thirds of those kids on a given team, and I'm saying this as a for instance, have no good understanding of what it means to grow up as a minority. And I mean, everybody views the world from their own viewpoint. And I think a lot of these people who haven't experienced some degree of racism, some degree of social injustice, some degree of hatred, I don't think they've got a good understanding of it. And I don't think they've got a good understanding of the symbolic nature of what they're actually doing. I think Kaepernick did. I think he truly and fully understood, hey, this could be a career ender. If I do this, this could be a career ender, and a 6 to 7 figure salary is going away.
Well, we heard Michael Roseibe talk about Twitter, talk about Facebook. We heard South Park even mention the Twitter trolling. Social media has created, I believe this, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, it's all created, I think, a more cynical society, a bitter society, because A, you have people that can hide in anonymity. People will say anything they want. And then you have just people who write articles that only really tell one side of the story, only want to get their point across, and it creates so much division. There's so much information out there, and there's so much bad information. And the truth is, because most people spend their days in front of their phone and locked onto the computer, nobody has good conversations anymore. Nobody wants to have a conversation, and it doesn't have to be a debate, where I can admit, okay, I'm wrong. Yeah, I'm wrong, but can you see my side and can you admit this part is right? Nobody wants to give in and compromise a little bit and meet in the middle to come to a solution. You won't have a solution here until both sides are willing to compromise. Because if Colin Kaepernick, Michael Roseibe, Muhammad Berry, Tyshawn Neal are saying it's all this or nothing, nothing's ever going to happen. You have to come to the middle to find out that people are different. People are going to have different beliefs. There will always be social injustice. There will be. There will always be a racist out there. You're not going to end racism. You're not.
Oh, not at all.
We are a capitalist society. You make more money than me. Why do you make more money than me, Rob? Because you're smarter than me and you're a doctor.
Well, I am a lot smarter than you.
No, but you chose that career path, and that gets you to the top of the pyramid.
Well, and the thing is, though, too, inequality exists.
Yes.
And it's intrinsic, and I think people have a problem. I think there needs to be equal opportunities within society, but you can't make people equal.
No,
the opportunities have to be there, but you can't make people equal. Some of us are dumber or smarter than others. Some of us have more or less talents than other people. Some of us, I'm talking about you here, some of us are better looking than others.
Exactly.
Some of us
you're better looking than me, they're smarter than me, and you're a lot wealthier than I am, but I still love you.
I bring beer on occasion to your house.
And I gave you coffee beer tonight.
But yeah, I think people have a fundamental lack of understanding of the fact that inequality is natural.
Yes.
And it's not necessarily a bad thing. People are not equal. And that's just that's fact of the matter.
But people don't want to admit that.
And you can't base the equality on somebody's color of skin. But, and I think that's where...
That's true. But if you are putting it... But it's not... But I don't think all inequality is racial.
No, and it's not.
But sometimes it gets portrayed that way.
If something bad happens to you and you're in a socioeconomic minority, if you're a racial, gender, or economic minority... And something bad happens, it's not necessarily because of racism. Sometimes bad things happen. Sometimes you do stupid things. Sometimes when the cop says drop the gun and you've got a criminal record and you don't drop the gun, you're going to get shot, and race has absolutely nothing to do with it.
I believe there were 800 and plus police shootings in 2015, and 241 were to African Americans. So a quarter, not even. So I mean, there's white people getting shot. There's Mexicans getting shot. All sorts of people getting shot.
True. You know, my one devil's advocate argument on that would be the vast majority of the people in the United States are white.
True.
So the percentage getting shot is higher on the African American side.
Okay, I'll give you that. That's
The per capita number of people getting shot. Now, there's also a socioeconomic and educational divide as well, which I think puts minorities in more of a situation in which crime is viewed as a potential option.
Yeah.
Which then puts them at a disadvantage when they are confronted by a police officer.
So there you go, folks. 38 minutes on social
economic.
Are we going
to talk about the freaking Illinois game at all?
Well, first of all,
the fact that Nebraska beat a so-so Northwestern team. And, of course, Northwestern beat Duke, who beat your Golden Domers this weekend.
Well, how about this? This week's Remington Trophy Watchlist Spotlight features the heart of the Ohio State line, Pat Elflein. A 6'3", 300-pound fifth-year graduate for the Buckeyes. He started 29 of 42 games in his career. This year, he made the switch from offensive guard to center, where he's already regarded as one of the top players at that position. The second-ranked Buckeyes, 3-0 in the season. They have been doing impressive stuff on the ground. 306 yards per game rushing. Total offense, 545 yards per game. Elflein is a two-time first-team All-Big Big Ten Conference player. And again, he made the switch to center this year, most likely because they believe that's the position he's going to play in the National Football League, Rob. You like this kid, don't you?
This is the guy. We've talked about the guys we've kind of had on our own little personal list.
And he's on your list?
This is the guy, at least going into the season and at this point up to now. I've watched two of Ohio State's games. This is the guy that thus far is number one on my list. If I had to give, granted, it's not up to me. If I had to give out the Remington Trophy at this point in the season, he's the one who'd get it.
Well, and they're saying he's going to probably play in the league at that position, and he's so experienced just on the offensive line, playing the guard position, moving over. So, and the Buckeyes have been impressive. After watching them at Oklahoma, I'm a believer. And what's impressive is they only had three starters back on offense. That's amazing.
That they have, but I mean, God, if you talk about a place that reloads, this is a place that reloads. I mean, You look at Nebraska in the mid-90s. We graduated 4 fifth-year seniors off of the offensive line in after the 94 season. One starter returning on the offensive line. They averaged nearly 400 yards rushing a game after that. Pretty damn impressive numbers right there. So Nebraska was able to reload. These guys, Ohio State's like that. They can graduate 8 out of 11 starters or send 8 out of 11 guys graduated or onto the NFL. That's one of those things where if they're going to send 8 guys onto the NFL, that's a case of it's just a reloading. It's a machine there right now.
Can I?
Go ahead.
All right. We rarely get breaking news during a podcast.
My phone's been lighting.
This just happened. And Rob, I know this is going to be tough for you, but it was just announced that Milt Tenneper passed away. I know what he meant to you. I know what he meant to everybody in Nebraska. He's been sick with leukemia. He was just at practice earlier in the week, or was it last week when everybody shook his hand on his way out?
Which I could be wrong. I think that might have been a video from earlier
was
in
it?
The season. He had a bout with some, I don't know exactly what, but a type of pneumonia a couple of weeks ago and had been pretty ill recently.
Have you seen him recently or not?
I did a couple of weeks ago.
Did you know it was getting close, or did you?
I knew he was ill a couple of weeks ago. He had made a little bit of a recovery, however. And like I said, I'm just getting the breaking news, which several news outlets are carrying it. I'm getting it from, my phone's been lighting up here.
I was wondering what was going, we're sitting there, I go, God, your phone's going off, and then mine just went off, and it came through the
I got a lot
what,
of...
What do you mean to you? I know it's going to be emotional, and you didn't want to talk about it. I'm like, we have to talk about it.
Outside of biological family,
yes.
This is a guy who is an absolute father figure to a lot of guys. Don't have a lot of words for this, I got to be honest with you. This is something that I think a lot of guys in the team, a lot of the offensive linemen who played for him, this is something we've kind of been batting around in our heads over the last months to 18 months or so since he was diagnosed with leukemia, which frankly that was almost 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago that he got diagnosed with leukemia. The guy fought it tooth and nail for the better part of the last 2.5 years, and it was a bit of a losing battle, and I think a lot of us had kind of resigned ourselves to the fact that at some point this is something that is going to happen.
I've heard a lot of people, and tell me, you're the doctor, I'm going to ask you this. A lot more of my friends are getting leukemia later on in life.
I don't know if it's the numbers thing per se. The thing is that it's kind of a twofold thing in that, a lot of leukemias have a tendency to pop up in younger people. Oftentimes, it's a childhood form of cancer. Mm-hmm. At the same time, in younger people, it tends to be much more treatable, and younger people tend to withstand the rigors of going through the treatment, the chemotherapy, the radiation, if that's required as well, too. It used to be that if somebody came down with leukemia at a more advanced age, 50, 60, 70s, it oftentimes, again, this is depending on the type of leukemia, but it can be a very, very difficult thing to fight off at an older age. At the same time as well, too, the treatment tends to take much more of a toll on somebody who just doesn't have that ability to recover like a young person does.
So Milt was a father figure. Talk about him, but and you're right.
Milt was,
of all the other coaches, including Osborne.
Milt was a guy who I think he might have gotten, in terms of the media, from a passion standpoint, greatly overshadowed by other guys on the coaching staff and by other guys. I'm talking mainly about guys like McBride. McBride was, by all accounts, in the media, and by those of us who know Coach McBride,
he loved it.
Passionate, fiery guy. There were times where I would get teed off, ticked off, blow up, and throw some freshman defensive lineman into a heap, and Coach McBride would come up cursing up a storm, and I'm sitting there thinking, I don't want to mess with this guy. He was very fiery and passionate. Coach Tenneper had this ungodly amount of passion and fire, and it came from just an unbelievable depth of love for the players he coached, for the university that he coached for, and the state that he grew up. And he's a Nebraska native. He's a Harvard, Nebraska guy. Great story about Coach Tenneper. I remember one day in practice, Zach Wiegert read that Coach Tenneper played quarterback for Harvard. Zach comes into the meeting room and he's talking about how did you guys know this? Dude, this is so awesome. Coach Tenneper played quarterback for Harvard. And we're like, dude, Harvard, Nebraska. High school. It's like, oh.
So he was a father figure. Talk about the kind of coach from a teaching standpoint. How good was he?
Oh, you know, he was the ultimate technician. Well, I say technician in terms of the guy that wanted the technical perfection. I remember, you know, he still cared about those small details. And I remember when we blew out Colorado my sophomore year, would have been Tommy Frazier's true freshman year. I was a redshirt sophomore. We just lit them up. And this was a Colorado team. The whole time I was in Lincoln, Colorado was a who's who of next spring's NFL draft. Absolutely loaded every year. They came into Lincoln Halloween night, and we beat 51-7, 52-7, something like that. Just brutalized them. And I had some great plays, some excellent line calls. I had a pancake block against their All-American cornerback, Dion Figures, on a counter sweep, which led Calvin Jones into the end zone for a big touchdown. I came into meeting rooms the next morning, took one look at my grade, and I had a very mediocre grade in terms of how I graded out.
Like, because you never got C's in college.
Well, I mean, offensive line grade, little different than... Then
did you feel like you failed?
Then molecular genetics. So, but I'm sitting there going like, oh my God, I kicked the crap out of some of these guys, and it's a bunch of NFL.
What'd people. You do? Have your head the wrong way?
And it was literally Coach Timmer's. Oh, Rob, on such and such play, you stepped with your left foot, not your right. And he was even willing to concede because I was one of the swing guys, so I'd play both tackle spots. So I'd line up at right tackle and step with the left that I'd block, step with my left foot when I should have stepped with my right foot when I'm on the right side, vice versa. I'd do the block correctly, but I'd use the footwork for a left tackle as opposed to a right tackle on a given play. And he's like, listen, it's the wrong footwork. I got to downgrade you. But it was one of those, I don't have an argument against it. I mean, he was incredibly fair. But very much a technician. The thing is, though, that, I mean, there were few guys who loved this state, that team, and that university as much as he did. He was the guy who, you know, during the Solich era, he kind of somewhat unceremoniously got let go. And I think it was one of those situations where, they just needed a change, and Solich felt like he needed to put his stamp on it, have his people there, and not try and run some facsimile of an Osborne team, although Coach Tenneper knew Osborne's offense better than anybody on the planet, except maybe Osborne. And in some instances, he might have known it better than Osborne did.
Really?
I swear to God. He knew that offense inside and out, and it was very recognizable that he knew that offense inside and out. But even after somewhat unceremoniously getting released from his coaching duties, he was the guy off of all of those coaching staffs who still went to football games, who still went to practices.
Who was still pretty much welcomed back to the university.
Oh, my God. He was very much. He was always around. He had a great relationship with Cotton when Cotton was the offensive line coach. He's had a wonderful relationship with Kavanaugh since Kavanaugh hit the door down there. the guy just the guy literally he lived and died for this state, his family, and for Husker football. And I mean, wonderful, wonderful family. But he, I mean, to him, Nebraska football was family. And that's probably about the best way I could put it.
Assistant coach from 1974 to 2002. And without saying, he coached some of the greatest offensive linemen.
Arguably, in terms of All-Americans and trophy winners, he's arguably one of the greatest offensive line coaches there's been. I mean, just in terms of, you can't really stick statistics on an offensive line coach. You look at All-Americans, you look at NFL guys, and you look at the trophy winners, and the guy, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. The guy was an unbelievable coach. The thing I would like to emphasize with him, though, when you look at him from the standpoint of Nebraska football and Nebraska football history, is it pales in comparison to the person that he was in terms of how he treated his players, how much he loved us as people, and the passion he had for the people around him. And I think that's kind of the big bottom line. Football was important. The team was important. But it was the people around him. It was the players who made up the team that were just of ungodly utmost importance to him.
Which is going to make it an emotional Saturday as Huskers come back home to play Illinois. I can't imagine the tributes are going to take place and your phone continues to blow up. But Nebraska gets a Big Ten win on the road, wins at Northwestern. I saw on Twitter, and I want you to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, at Doc Talk Sports, again, at Doc Talk Sports, where you said, you know, you're not sold on whiskey yet. And we're talking about Wisconsin because, well, LSU win doesn't look that great. Maybe the Michigan State win doesn't look that good. Are you sold on Nebraska yet? I mean, do we know much after an Oregon win where they just got beat again at home by Colorado?
Who's been not all? Colorado's better, but this is definitely not a Chip Kelly, Marcus Mariota, Oregon team.
Let me ask you, do we know anything about Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota yet? I mean, do we?
Hard to say. Well, okay, here's my take. I had talked before about how last season Nebraska was a team that was one or two plays per game, maybe three, from being literally an 11-2 season,
yes,
a 10-3 season. I have mentioned that on numerous occasions as we've gone along here. It's that they were two or three plays a game from being 11-2, and you asked me, okay, well, if Nebraska goes 11-2 in 2015, does that mean they're a top five team? And I said, no, they're a 14th, 15th, 18th ranked 11-2 team.
Yeah.
They just are.
Much like Iowa was.
Yeah, that's how good they are.
Now, Husker fans aren't going to agree with you. You know that.
And I keep hearing people say, well, it's funny because I keep hearing Iowa people reference Iowa's 12-0 season in 2015.
No, they were 12-2.
Yeah, Iowa's not 12-0. They were 12-2, yes, and the two were ugly.
And listen, I host the Iowa Hawkeye postgame show. I'll be the first one to say, no, you didn't go undefeated. You went 12-2.
Yeah, I keep hearing people talk about 12-0 Iowa, and I'm like, they weren't 12-0. They had a 12-0 stretch, and then they stumbled their – it was kind of so-so, and then it was just brutal at the very end in the Rose Bowl.
But do we know anything?
Nebraska, I think Nebraska has the potential to be that 10-3 team. They really do. And if you'd ask me, okay, if they're 10-3, are they like a 7th-ranked 10-3 team? No. They're a 15th, 18th, 21st-ranked 10-3 team.
But my point is, I think Iowa, Wisconsin, and Nebraska all fall into that same category.
I agree. I think Nebraska's markedly better than Iowa.
Markedly
is how much stuff they can sell on a national basis, and they're definitely better. Markedly, they are better than Iowa. Nebraska.
Yeah, I wouldn't say heads and shoulders above.
14-7 against Rutgers.
True.
They're not good, dude.
No, they can't. Well, they can't stop the run. That's what's amazing to me. And what I like about Nebraska now is, A, Tommy Armstrong's not turning the ball over. It's amazing what happens when you don't turn the football over. And if Zigbo doesn't fumble going into the end zone the other day. That a couple different fumbles.
It should have been a 38-17
win. And I liked what Damon Benning had to say on Twitter, is that that's why you it should have been, could have been, but at the end of the day, you can't eliminate the human portion of the game of football. I mean, turnovers are part of the game. I mean, whether you like bad calls, Les Miles loses his job because they take away a touchdown at the end of the game against Auburn.
Les Miles lost his job because he's got, what was the stat, 6 straight top 5 recruiting classes.
Yeah.
And people want that to correlate into poll finishes.
Yeah.
You get 6 straight top 5 recruiting classes, people want to see you finishing in the top 5 every year. Not where they're sitting right now. And abhorrent quarterback play. The recruiting's been excellent, save for a couple of key positions on the team, and it's really bit them in the foot the last few years.
Nebraska's not going to go unbeaten, okay? And don't get mad at me for saying that. But I think they win an important road game. Do they win at Ohio State? Do they win at Wisconsin? Or do they win at Michigan State?
History says Michigan State. Nebraska is due, granted, with more wins. No, Nebraska is to Michigan State what Northwestern is to Nebraska. We are their thorn in their side.
Do they choke one at home?
Looking at the current schedule, I don't think
Neither
so.
Do
not,
I.
Not this year. I think they. Here's my thing. Sometimes teams get mentally broken early in a season. I think it happened to Oklahoma this year. Oklahoma is a far better team than what we've seen. When they lost to Houston, it mentally broke.
Yeah.
It really did. I think Oklahoma is they are truly, their talent hasn't changed. They're the same potential title-winning talent that they were before the season started. Mentally, they're just broken. When Nebraska lost on that Hail Mary to BYU, it broke them in the sense that all of a sudden things start going a little bit wrong for you. There's that thought process in the back of your mind of, ooh, could these guys sneak in and get us here at the end? Could somebody come back and beat us at the end? And you saw that happen time and time again all last season against Illinois. All game long against Purdue, but Illinois, Wisconsin, Northwestern. It was just one game after another following that BYU game where they just didn't – you had that mental brokenness where they just felt like we're just not going to get it done. We've got the lead, but we're still not going to get it done. There's a chance this team's going to beat us. And the moment you start thinking that, you're going to get beat. That hasn't happened this year. And I think that – I think that's huge for them in the sense that – if they're in a situation where that hasn't happened, that mental break hasn't happened, I don't think they lose at home because I think they are a far different team mentally than they were last year. Talent-wise, Nebraska's not a whole lot different. I'd love to have Janovich back, but outside of that, this is not a vastly different team than what Nebraska had last season.
You know what it is, it's a vibe, it's an energy. And when things start going the right way, that energy exudes from the team to the coaches to the fan base. You can feel it.
Oh, it does. And when you lose, the opposite happens.
Yeah, and that's what happened last year.
Yeah, Iowa had a bit of that vibe. They felt like they were going to pull out every game they were in, except maybe that Rose Bowl.
That was over. That the first time Christian McCaffrey touched the football.
Yeah, that game was over quick. So, every game outside of that. That Iowa played last year, I guarantee you, Iowa was convinced they knew they were going to pull it out one way or another.
So Lovie Smith comes to Lincoln, brings the Illinois. Are you sold on Lovie Smith as a college coach? We've seen this before.
This is a guy who, in my opinion, is a lifelong NFL guy. It's two different sports. There's a small number of coaches who can bounce between the two and do fairly well at both levels.
This just reminds me of the Bill Callahan hire, where a guy just wanted a job so damn badly, so he took the first one that was offered to him.
Well, it was just down the road from where he was currently living.
Well, he was at Tampa Bay before that, wasn't he? Yeah, because he went from Chicago to Tampa, then he got fired.
God, I forgot about that.
Yeah, everybody forgets that he was in Tampa.
That was fast. Well, and I think Illinois saw this as a splash hire.
So do I.
I think Steve Peterson with Callahan was like, I need somebody.
But hey,
at that point, he was ready to go find some janitor who coached the high school JV team.
You know, looking back, you remember, the funny thing is we're getting off the Illinois game, but that's fine because it's the Illinois game and Nebraska's going to win. People forget that a name that popped up with Steve Peterson was Mike Zimmer. Mike Zimmer, now the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, was rumored to have accepted the job. He was with the Cowboys at the time and then just backed out of it and said, nah, it's just too screwed up of a deal up there. I'm not going to go work for Steve Peterson.
Well, I mean, you had the whole Houston nut thing. And
that was embarrassing.
You had the whole, prior to that even, you had Dave Wannstedt, who I still remember when the Miami Dolphins inexplicably extended Wannstedt's contract by 1 year, and Wannstedt couldn't take the Nebraska job, and all of a sudden Steve Peterson was sitting there going, oh, crap, I just fired Solich.
And how ironic is it that, well, Steve Peterson had fired Dave Wannstedt, and those two hate each other's guts now, too.
I think anybody who works with Steve for any extended period of time tends to hate his guts.
You think?
It's an assumption. I'll admit that.
You're not going to believe this, Rob, but for the first time in Doc Talk history, we have gone over the 1 hour mark.
We could do that every night.
We really could. That. Thank God we had
We didn't even drink that much tonight.
Thank God we had the Surly Coffee Bender.
God, I'm so stoked up on caffeine right now. It's insane.
Thanks for listening to the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. Please share it with a friend. And if you're listening to it on iTunes, please give us a review, because I'm told that the more reviews we get, the more visibility it gets. So that'd be kind of nice. And a lot of people listen to us. Hope you like the social talk, the Milt Tenneper talk, the Husker football talk. Tell somebody about it and, well, spread the word. I want to thank Dave Remington and the Remington Trophy for sponsoring the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Also, thanks to Husker Hounds and Husker Max. For Dr. Rob Zadisk, I'm Travis Justice. Talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.